Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody, it's Amber, and I'm here today with Steve.
Hello, everyone.
And Chris.
Hey, everybody.
And we are going to be talking about web content accessibility guidelines, pause, stop, hide. So a specific success criteria. But before we dive into that, we are going to start with a beverage. And of course, if you are looking for show notes for this episode, this is episode number 104. So you can find show notes and a full transcript if you go to accessibilitycraft.com/104. Chris, what are we drinking today?
Fun fact for our audience, I usually pick the beverages before Amber picks the topic. And I appreciate that you paired a nerdy topic to go with our nerdy beverage today. We are having Fallout Nuka-Cola Quantum. So this is a licensed beverage produced by Jones Soda Company that is based on a beverage that you drink as like a healing slash power-up item in a popular classic video game, which is the Fallout series that I got made into an Amazon TV show. So it's got this fun,
it's blue.
Like 50s aesthetic. And yeah, it's super blue. They said it glows. So I think if you put a black light up to it, it's supposed to glow, but I don't have a black light because I'm not, you know, throwing raves at my house.
I do.
What a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
If you told us, we could have recorded this podcast in the dark with black lights. We could have gotten glow sticks.
I actually have a couple of them. I should have done that. I didn't know that.
Oh, man. Well, next time we have a black light beverage, give us advance notice, Chris. I have never heard of this game.
Yeah. It's a classic game. It's a post-apocalyptic survival action game, basically. And you're a guy, you're alone in the wasteland, and you come out of a vault that's intended to protect you from the apocalypse. Only things have gone. So you've lived in this vault for generations, and you come out, you know, hundreds of years after whatever the great calamity was. Usually it's like nukes dropping everywhere is usually the premise. And, you know, you are greeted with this world that's an irradiated wasteland with mutants and all kinds of warring factions and rival gangs. And you have to survive and make your way. And
why did you come out of the vault?
That's the interesting thing is, and this is what I think the Amazon series alludes to, is not all the vaults were good. Like some of the vaults in the lore of this universe were made purely to perform strange experiments on people. What if we had, you know, drugs in the water supply? How long would a society last under XYZ circumstances in the vaults and such? And so eventually people come out. The intent is always to come out. But this was a soda that existed in that universe. And the fun thing about these games too is they like really play into the 50s aesthetic. Like if you remember, like if you've seen like the old PSAs of, you know, hide under your desk when the bombs go off, right? In the Cold War era, like ads, a lot of the aesthetic of the game and like the music and the sound and all the design is like makes references to that time period in a fun way.
Is it like that movie with Brendan Fraser where he was like living under the ground and he came up in the 90s.
Yeah.
Blast from the past. There we go.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit like that, maybe, except with, you know, mutants.
Yeah. It says on the bottle, it says, with its unique flavor and distinct bluish glow, Nuka-Cola Quantum was poised to dominate the soft drink market. Unfortunately, it was released to the public on October 23rd, 2077, the same day the bombs fell.
Yep. So are we going to glow after we drink this?
I don't know. I do have a degree of trust for Jones Soda Co. I probably wouldn't have gotten this for us to taste if it wasn't made by a reputable soda company. And it's interesting. They only sell these as a two-pack because I think what a lot of people do is they drink one and then they have the other one full to put on the shelf in their gaming man cave or whatever. But obviously we're not doing that.
I don't think it's a gaming man cave. I'm pretty sure that would be called a gaming nerd cave.
Yes.
It's crafted for a post-nuclear future by Jones Soda, which is, I will say, is a pretty good trustworthy name.
Jones. Uh-huh. Things made by people with the last name of Jones are trustworthy.
Ba-dum-ts.
All right, so it says berry lemonade. It is mm-hmm. bright blue, which is super throwing me off. But it smells, I think a snow cone might smell.
Yeah, I'm getting like the snow cone. Yeah. Actually, you know what it really makes me think of is, you know those like popsicles that you freeze in the long skinny plastic sleeves that you push out? Mm-hmm. It smells exactly like that to me. Yeah, it tastes like a push pop.
Like a rocket pop. You know those rocket pops with the red, white, and blue?
Oh, bomb pops.
Yeah, that's what they're called. Yeah.
Yeah, because those have a little bit of a lemon and mm-hmm. a berry. I always think it's funny when they make things like blue and they call it, I don't know, blue raspberry. And I'm like, but why is it neon blue?
I never really understood that either. I don't mind the flavor. We've had sweeter sodas on this podcast. This one is not as sweet as some of the other ones. I think we had a Stewart's grape once that was just like.
Oh, yeah. Really with Alex sweet. Stein. Mm-hmm. That one was like drinking, I don't know, simple syrup, liquid sugar. This is not too bad. Yeah, it does kind of have a decent lemony flavor.
It's definitely sort of. Like middle of the road for me in terms of like it, dislike it. What do you think, Steve?
It smelled sweet, but it's not as sweet tasting. And it's, I like the fizziness of it. Like, I think it's a good pop. I don't have any problem with it. It does remind me of the bomb pop flavor a little bit.
Yeah, it totally reminds me of that. I think you're right. That's a good flavor comparison. I'd like it better if it didn't have blue number one, but I'm guessing they were blue in the game.
Well, I mean, it was the nuclear stuff, right? It was released on the day the bombs dropped.
That's right.
Is this one of the food colorings that's going to be illegal in the United States in 2 years?
I thought those were only reds.
The red one?
Maybe. I don't know. So that just got announced.
If I were wondering a post-apocalyptic hellscape and I came across one of these, it probably would taste pretty refreshing compared to, you know, irradiated puddle water, which is what most people in the Fallout universe drink. So definitely good. Better than that.
I got really distracted because I actually wanted to know for all of our listeners and watchers in Europe, I'm sorry, you probably cannot get this. This food coloring is banned in Europe. So we are going to get cancer. You will not.
Or just get hyperactive.
That's right.
I had to Google it because I had to know. But yeah, I mean, before we move on, we do have to give it, what would you say? Is this a thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, thumbs down? Would you get it again? Would you give it to your children? No. Thumbs down, Chris says?
I'm thumbs down on this one.
I'm neutral.
If it's like, if the question is, would you get it again, go buy it? I'm definitely a thumbs down.
Yeah.
Even though you like video games, not enough to make you buy the soda.
Yeah.
Right.
Steve's neutral. I think I'm neutral, a thumbs down.
I'll probably give the other one to the kids, though.
Not get thrown away. That's it's not that bad. Yeah, that's
check,
the thing.
Check Emma them needs- with the black light 24 hours after they drink it. Let us that's know right. if they're glowing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad flavor. We have tasted way grosser things on this podcast.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't think I'd go out to buy it.
I choose this over a pickle flavored beer any day.
Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah.
I'll raise my thumbs down to a middle for the novelty factor and the fact that I like the Fallout games. But yeah, it's a novelty soda. What did we really expect, right?
Yeah.
It might be worth trying if you're into novelty stuff. So, all right. Yeah. So we are going to talk about WCAG 2.2.2, which is fun to say, pause, stop, hide, and how prefers reduced motion relates to that. Specifically, what we are going to be talking about is whether or not coding all the animations on a website to not play if someone has turned on reduced motion is sufficient for meeting that WCAG success criteria. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Chris, do you want to, for anybody who's not familiar with pause, stop, hide, do you want to explain what that is or read the requirement?
Yeah, I'll read the requirement in as gauging of a way as I can. These are usually pretty dense reading, but we have success criterion 2.2.2, pause, stop, hide. This is for level A, and it indicates that for moving, blinking, scrolling, or auto-updating information, all of the following must be true. For information that is moving, blinking, or scrolling, that information that is moving, blinking, or scrolling must, that one, starts automatically, two, lasts for more than 5 seconds, and or three, is presented in parallel with other content, that there is a mechanism for that type of content that the user can pause, stop, or hide it unless the movement, blinking, or scrolling is part of an activity where it is essential. And then for auto-updating content, any auto-updating information that one, starts automatically, or two, is presented in parallel with other content, there's a mechanism for the user to pause, stop, or hide it, or control the frequency of the updating unless the auto-updating, again, is part of an activity where it is essential.
Yeah. I mean, essential is sort of an interesting question on there, right? Like maybe if you were, I'm trying to think, on a sports website or something where you were doing, I don't know, fantasy football and you needed real-time information so you could change things and you were on the page that's real-time updates from this game or something. And it's like text, like saying, okay, here's what happened. And now here's what happened. And now here's what happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's essential, right, that you have auto-updating content. In order to actually get that information in real time. Or a stock ticker
that's scrolling or updating in real time, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but even that, is it essential that it be real time always without giving someone the ability to stop it and read it, right?
I think it depends on the context in which that information is being given, right?
Yeah. So the main thing is, right, any animations, anything that plays for longer than 5 seconds, there has to be a way for people to stop it because it could be hard for them to read. Maybe they don't read that fast if it's words. It could be disruptive to the screen reader. So I've been on websites. I think we actually saw this when we were looking at the City of Georgetown website. They had a carousel that was auto-playing. And I had a screen reader on and I was lower down on the website. And it would just say slide one, slide two in the middle of what I was doing, right? So it interrupted the screen reader. The thing with the snowfall animation or other things like that is they could potentially cause people to feel ill. Or if it's rapid flashing, right, it could cause a seizure for some people. So there's a lot of different reasons why you might want to allow someone to turn off animations.
Or just a preference, right? Or just, I'm tired of seeing this snowfall. It's been on here for over a week.
It was cute for about 5 minutes. And then it's just distracting, right?
Right.
So the obvious way to do this is to add a button that says, you know, pause, or maybe it's for a whole page. Like you have it in the header and it's turn off animations or stop animations and it controls everything on the page. But there are other ways to stop animations, one of which is prefers reduce motion. Should we talk about what that is?
Sure. So prefers reduce motion is a operating system level setting on the Mac. You can go to accessibility display and there's a little checkbox that you can check that says reduce motion. And then developers making websites or applications can then utilize that in the user agent. It'll be presented to them. You can use CSS to stop animations or to change things. You can use a media query, basically just a media query with prefers reduce motion defined. And then whatever's within those brackets, you can decide to modify for users that have that setting. You could also target it with JavaScript, with the match media method. So dot match media prefers reduce motion is equal to reduce. And so that gives the website creator or the application creator a way to utilize system settings to either turn on or turn off animations or reduce animations, which we might get into a little bit, that it's called prefers reduce motion. And then the WCAG guidelines talk about stopping or pausing animations. So there may be a little bit of confusion around the naming of these things and the actions in which a developer might take to reduce motion.
Because reducing doesn't necessarily mean eliminating all, right? It just means correct, having less intense animations. Right. Yeah. Well, I think it'd be really interesting to talk a little bit more about that. And then, of course, we want to give our opinions on whether we think that just doing this without the pause button is sufficient. But first, we're going to take a short commercial break.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
We're back. Enjoying some nuclear blue soda there, Steve.
That's right.
Yeah.
Refreshing.
So, what do we think about using Prefers Reduced Motion to meet WCAG 2.2.2 pause, stop, hide? Is it sufficient if that's all you do?
Mm. So is your question, is it sufficient in every case or is it sufficient in certain cases?
I don't know. Why do you ask that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the back and forth that we had in that X post was around just meeting the criteria, right? And sure, we can always go a little bit further than meeting the bare minimum, right? But I think so let's take the snowflake falling, for example. Let's use that since that was kind of what sparked a lot of this. Does prefer reduce motion meet minimum WCAG guidelines for that animation? And I would probably say yes.
Yes, because what Chris read out, it just says there's a mechanism to stop it.
Yeah. And I did a little bit of a deep dive on this. The word mechanism too, like it can mean a lot of different things. And it's almost like there's hard mechanisms and there's soft mechanisms, like where, you know, if you code a button, you know, a pause button on the page, right, in the content, that's kind of a hard mechanism, right? That's going to be there. That's going to meet the widest audience that you could meet, right? Maybe if they have JavaScript turned off, maybe that's going to be a problem. But, and more of a soft mechanism maybe is the prefers reduce motion, because it's not as if the prefers reduce motion is apparent to everybody. A lot of people just aren't educated. A lot of developers aren't even educated on
that exists.
That it exists, let alone users. And in system settings, prefers reduce motion gets moved around from time to time with system updates. It's maybe hard for some people to find. A lot of users don't even know it exists. Maybe users are on systems where they don't have settings level control. Maybe you're at the library. Does the library let you turn preferred reduce motion on? I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a really good initial step. And I would argue that for many, depending, I think it somewhat depends on what you're implementing, but for many applications on the web, if you're factoring in, you know, you flag mentally, okay, I'm building something that's going to jump around the page like a Jack Russell Terrier. Like, I need to have this respect the prefers reduced motion setting. I think that's a minimum. And that's kind of like the starting point. And I like the idea of websites, and I think we all like this, websites responding to the device, responding to the user preference without the user having to take any action. I don't think that's perfect in every scenario. I also think that to an extent, like where you could get away with only using prefers reduced motion and not having any other mechanisms like hard mechanisms. I think I have a personal preference towards that just because I'm a bit of a minimalist. If you can't tell by the lack of clutter in my background, you know, like I don't like a lot of stuff. And that includes inside of user interfaces where if you have a bunch of animated things or things moving around, if you have 9 different pause buttons, you know, across a page, I think that can also be its own kind of weird situation. But I know for us, it's just, we just try not to animate anything. And that's kind of our high level solution as well. I don't know if any of that really consolidates into a direct opinion about all of this. I think I like respecting the user's wishes, and I like to only use hard stops and hard toggles on and off with great care, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I saw actually a couple of years ago that Hide De Vries actually had a blog post about this, which we can link in the show notes. And he walked through, you know, what is it technically a mechanism that gives users the ability to stop things? And I think the answer on that is yes. By technicality, I think it does pass pause, stop, hide. But what I got to in X in that conversation is I don't think it meets the spirit of accessibility. And so we will fail things in our audits if they also do that, because I haven't, and I think we can also link this in the show notes. Like, I did a Google search for websites make me nauseous, right? I'm trying to think, like, what would a user search if they're trying to figure out how do I stop websites from making me want to puke, right? Or make me feel dizzy or whatever. And the answers that are provided, you know, now there's AI at the top of Google searches. So you don't even have to go to pages. They are like, well, the first one says, many websites give you the ability to to toggle animations off. So like right there, Google is saying the website should do it. And then it has all this stuff about, you know, like, it says, take screen breaks. I'm just like, okay, well, this isn't very helpful information for users. And then it's go get an eye exam. None of them tell users, and not just in the AI. Like, I went and looked at a bunch of the top search results, many of which were from medical websites, like hospitals that have published blog posts about it. And none of them say, oh, there's a setting on your computer you can turn off or turn on, and then it will block the motion and maybe that will help you. And so where I land on this is that, like you were saying, Steve, how do we even know that users know this exists? And that was kind of what I pushed back with that person, because he's like, well, wouldn't somebody who needs this know that it exists? But I'm like, but how would they know? If I do Google research and no one is even telling me it exists, is my doctor going to tell me it exists when I go in for my eye exam? Probably not. How would the doctor know? And so I think we should respect that, but I don't think it's sufficient for meeting the success criterion. Maybe right. Technically sufficient, but not really. It's not best for users.
Right. And I don't think it meets 100% every scenario too. I mean, we discussed a few minutes ago, you know, a stock ticker, right? Chris mentioned, or your pizza order, right? You know, if I prefer reduced motion enabled on my pizza order, is it not going to show me that my pizza's done? Like, are they going to provide an alternative? You know how when you watch it's baking, or you know, it's boxed, it's ready to be picked up, right? So I don't think that the prefers reduced motion is 100% true compliance every time. But I think back to what you were saying about the spirit of accessibility, I think it, a lot of times what we're doing when we're doing audits and we're trying to evaluate things like this, and this may be why people get so upset with accessibility professionals, because we get really into the weeds of, is it conformant or is it not, right? And it's because we're balancing conformance with usability. So when you're an accessibility professional, you really side with usability a lot more than even conformance, right? Because conformance is the bare minimum. Are we really aiming for the bare minimum, or are we aiming for usability and what's important to most users?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always like to look at, because the neat thing about WCAG is that it's open source and anyone can go in and contribute to the guidelines or discussions or help work on them or maybe create or suggest technique documentations. So that is one thing. Like, I went and looked at the understanding docs, which has failure and success examples for each one, and none of them say that. And then I went and looked at the GitHub for WCAG because it uses GitHub, and in the issues you can see people are discussing, and there was actually a discussion about this. Should we add a technique doc that says this is sufficient for a success? And really where I think it lands, if you read through this, is that is the same thing, is that a lot of times, a lot of people don't think that it is sufficient. So, yeah, I don't know. It's like maybe on a technicality it is, but probably not really.
I think it also somewhat depends on the type of page and how the information is being delivered, because I think about a lot of Apple's product advertising pages where there's just a lot of really weird parallax and transition animations and things like that that happen either on scroll or on click or things like that. And that's where I think having something that respects the user setting is really important. But also I struggle to imagine an implementation that wouldn't just have buttons everywhere. Would there be an alternate version of the page?
No, there'd be one toggle.
Or there would just be one toggle that could disable everything.
Yeah, there was actually a talk at WordPress Accessibility Day 2024 that Danielle Zaccaro gave about this. So maybe I can find the link and we can put it in our show notes. But they basically talked about how you can put a toggle up at the top, and they showed how with code, like then that one toggle would control all the animations. So you don't have to have pause buttons everywhere. But that said, I want to clarify something, because what you were talking about, Chris, was animations on scroll that is different and are not covered by the success criteria. Animation on scroll has its own, well, there's a success criterion related to animations on interaction, which is what an animation on scroll would fall under. Mm. But they would, by definition, pass pause, stop, hide, because you can stop scrolling and the animation stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But that's there's other rules related to that. So this is really looping animations.
Yeah.
Like we talked about, like carousels, the autoplay.
Yeah, or
the
GIFs.
Snowfall. Animated GIFs. That was one that I had an interesting conversation with Matt Cromwell about yesterday. Well, it won't be yesterday when this episode comes out, but he joined me on the live stream. We're doing live accessibility remediation on the WP Product Talk website. And we were talking about that animated GIF because there's one on that website. So yeah, it's really things that like loop and play for longer than 5 seconds, regardless of user, like a user didn't start it or didn't trigger it in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think what you're saying, Chris, I think that Apple homepage is a perfect example of where prefers reduced motion is applicable, and I think helps quite a bit. And I will tag that with, I think Apple does a really good job at this. I haven't tested it lately, but I do think it's a case by case. It's not a,
I haven't seen a lot of auto playing content on Apple website. I see more of the like animations on interaction. Yeah. And even that to a degree, I think that they've really toned down and they're a good leader on the accessibility front generally. So here's an interesting thing. On that prefers reduced motion developer doc, on Mozilla developer docs, there is a really big red banner at the top that says, it has a warning icon and it says warning. An embedded example at the bottom of this page has scaling movement that may be problematic for some readers. Readers with vestibular motion disorders may wish to enable the reduced motion feature on their device before viewing the animation. And I thought this was really interesting because, well, one, it made me think a little bit about TV shows where you'll see warnings sometimes that say like this episode contains like flashing or something like that as a warning to people so they know, oh, maybe I don't want to watch this if I have photosensitive epilepsy or some other disorder. I also thought it was interesting because if you saw a notice like this and you'd never heard of reduced motion, well, now you know it's available. So I'm like, maybe this is an answer. You don't need a pause button if you're making it clear that, hey, there's things on our website that might bother you. And hey, there's a setting you can turn on your computer that will fix this.
Was this on a page that's trying to specifically explain this issue, like the animation issue? So it kind of has to show you a bad example of it, right? But it actually went
further. Well, this is on the prefers reduced motion, like the one that teaches about how to use the media query. And this is also an interesting example, because if you have reduced motion off, so you're getting full motion, then it plays a lot, I guess. And then if you turn reduced motion on, it doesn't stop altogether. It's just less intense, right? It's reduced. It's not stop motion. But yeah, so they had to provide an example. And so they put a warning up before you would see it, because it's below the scroll line, the fold, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some interesting discussions around creativity, right, as well. And if we start advocating for these ugly warning notices on websites, the creative community may eat us alive. Now, I do.
But it's interesting, because it's okay, well, now you're allowed to fail, I guess.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you have to, I don't know. I guess there's maybe arguments for maybe sometimes it is necessary in some weird context to have something like this where you would need a warning label for your own content. But the more fundamental thing I come back to is, if you have to put a warning label up, should it be there in the first place? Is it actually necessary to have it that way? Or is there like ego involved? If you take my drift, this was my vision and I don't care if I have to put a warning label up, this is how I want it kind of thing, which I don't know if that serves users. There's probably some exception out there, right? There must be like some niche edge case where you have to have something that can make some people nauseous, but it has to be that way. And so you have to have the warning label, but I can't think of one. I don't know.
Well, TV shows are interesting, right? Like with the flashing. I feel like I've seen that maybe on like Stranger Things or like horror movies sometimes. I know I go watch horror movies, but you know, like thrillers, they'll have like strobe effects or things like that. And it is interesting. I'm assuming that's required by law that they do that.
Or your insurance company. You know,
because they got sued too many times. I know. I just thought it was interesting, because this might be one way to get around the whole people don't know the setting exists. Oh, well, I've told them the setting exists. Yeah. So now they can turn it on and then they can use my website and I don't need to add pause buttons.
Yeah, this may be a way to cover your own self, right?
Yeah, it might be a CYA situation.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to allude to. But I think we can make... I think as developers and builders of the web, I think we can make intelligent decisions in regards to what's best for usability, and when prefers reduced motion actually helps accomplishes what you're trying to accomplish. And the warning is a little bit of a cop-out, but I get why they did it, because they kind of have to show how prefers reduced motion works, right? Mm-hmm. And I think on our normal size, I think we can be a little more thoughtful in how we implement and make things usable.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever had a user be like, I went to that website and it didn't have an auto scrolling carousel, or I went to that website and it didn't have snowfall, and so I decided not to buy the product. Right? I don't know. Mm. I think you can still have really great functional websites without having all that animation. But if you do have to have it, just put a pause button. So,
yep.
I think an interesting way to wrap up is that Jones Soda has little messages in the lids. And I think it might be fun to share those before we go offline. Mine says, dance is the way to joy.
Mine says, support live music.
Steve would definitely approve of that.
Strangely relevant message for Steve. It takes a beauty to appreciate beauty is mine.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, you're beautiful, Chris. I should give you dance is the way to joy, because I think you get frustrated sometimes with our kids' dance schedules. You can just keep this whenever you feel frustrated about that. You can just look at it and be like, no.
Yeah. Well, since he's so beautiful, make a necklace, a beautiful necklace with that
bottle cap necklace.
All right. Well, it's been fun chatting and drinking our nostalgic, fun quantum soda beverage.
Yeah.
And we'll see you back here in 2 weeks for another great conversation and craft beverage. Don't forget to subscribe and all those things.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.